space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon, let's go.
And this week, we're here to talk about Whistlespeak, the latest episode of Discovery. But before we get to that, we have some Trek news and some Retrek news.
Shall we do the Trek news, cuz? That's a bit depressing.
Yeah, we'll do the depressing Trek news. So, if you all
at the same time,
if you all remember when they rebooted Star Trek and the first J.J. Abrams film came out, yeah, that was 15 years ago today. So, yeah,
and we just got one banner for Retrek news. It's news we do.
So, 15 years.
But what? What a film, that first one.
Oh, it's a great film.
I mean, I like all the Calvin ones, but that one, pretty much a near-damn perfect Star Trek film. Like, it's up there even in the Star Trek films for me.
I'd agree, yeah.
It's not a bad film, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm but it's big, depressing that it's 15 years ago.
Yes, that's very depressing. Especially since, like, you know, we're still talking about, oh, are they going to do a fourth one? No, I suspect is the answer.
I think when they do another movie, they keep saying Star Trek IV's coming out. I honestly don't think they'll get the cast for the right price because they're stupid enough to announce it before telling them.
Well, also, they would, by all accounts, they were trying to offer them 2009 money in 2020 or whenever it was last kind of like picked to them. And they want Hemsworth at 2009 money. It's like, do yourself a word.
And the thing is that the whole point of the reboot was like, it's a younger take on all the characters. Well, not anymore. It's not. It's 15 years since that one.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'd happily watch that cast as the later version. You know, put them into, maybe even put them into a classic episode, but, you know, rejig it, have some fun with it because you're in the alternate timeline. But yeah, it's.
I honestly think when they do Star Trek 4, it'll be actually a new reboot of the.
Yeah, I think so. It'll just be something new, a different story. Yeah. But the anyway,
last thing which was muted was that it was going to be
another prequel, wasn't it?
Yeah, another kind of the origins of the Federation. It's like
We tend to avoid covering news about the new Star Trek film on the podcast because it just changes every 2 minutes and there's that many. Well, and there's no point speculating.
I think until there's sort of definite announced, there's no point talking about it, is there? Until we go,
I agree.
I'd also say it's like, I mean, it's fine. I don't mind it. Like, I don't mind prequels. Wherever you want to put it in the Star Trek universe, do the plot first, then do where you're going to set.
That would be nice.
With Strange New Worlds, there was every reason, like, the idea of Pike's Enterprise, like, we know the Enterprise, but we don't know what it was like under him. We don't know what his adventures were. And they have done something different, but with the feeling of the original. Perfect. And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But the more exciting news, or at least for us, we have got confirmation today, so this is half the press, will be bringing our live show, When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies, to Destination Trek in Blackpool this year.
Although if we ever take it up north, it's got to be When Trek Go Wrong at the Movies. I think you've got the northern
pronunciation. We could do that.
Sorry. Well,
is it 4,500 people attending already?
Just for our panel.
That's, I believe.
They're all going to be. We don't know what we're up against yet. It's probably going to be a really good talk or something
That 5,000 people, don't cancel your tickets. We are coming. It's been confirmed now. You're right.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And if you've been holding off on buying your tickets to see whether we were there, we are. We were going to be anyway, but we were just going to be going as punters. But now we're bringing the show.
Now we've actually got to go work.
And I've got to say, with kind of like the stuff we talked about after doing it, like I was so proud of the version we did at Sci-Fi Weekender. We're going to make it even better for the next one. Like
we are indeed.
It's the same show, but improved with kind of like
tweak a few things.
Yeah, we will. And if you saw it at the weekend,
we might have a few more slides in, and we might have some.
We might have
Let's say it. We removed some slides which didn't work. Like, you know, you only know when it goes on stage, really, what works and what doesn't. So the second time, it's always better on a show.
And if you did see us at the weekend, please don't spoil the ending for anybody, because we think that's going to be a lot of fun. So that is our news. We will bring you...
That was our solar system exclusive.
Yes, that's it.
Martians, Venusians, Jupiter, whatever they are. None of them had heard this before.
We're beaming this to the past for the new Star Trek prequel film. We're sending it to the future for Burnham. We're covering them all.
We are. And yeah, we will let you know more as and when we know more. I believe provisionally we're down for 11 o'clock Saturday morning on the second stage. So, but obviously that could change. So
and can we
will see you at Destination Trek.
Well, just when we're on Destination Trek, I just want to give a shout out to a couple other kind of fan panels, which was one of which me and Jim are going to briefly pop up in. It's like Favorite Trek, which is going to be a good laugh, which is also on the Saturday, I believe. We're just pitching our favorite episode, that's it. But everyone, like loads of people pitching their favorite episodes, should be a good time. And there's also a panel which I'm really excited about, which is Neurodiverse and Trek. So they did a sort of one with the best Kirk Fu in Star Trek, like throughout the many iterations. And this one's about neurodiversity and kind of the allegories for that in Trek. So yeah, I think they're really exciting.
No, there's loads more to be announced as well. So keep your eye on the Destination Trek page for more and more announcements as we get closer to the time. But we are here to talk about Discovery and the latest episode, Whistlespeak, which the only thing I could think of was Arrested Development, where he chips his tooth.
He did say that I could say my...
You can go first. Yeah. Right.
Last Thursday morning, when I got up before work, I checked it and dropped on Paramount, and I read the description. And I didn't watch it till after work on Thursday. So I was worrying all day. I was like, oh, my God.
I think I know where this movie's going.
It is. It's like you're on the pre-warp society. You've got Captain Burnham has to save Tilly, who we know is overachieving and saving them. The young ensign, well, not an ensign anymore, but she was a young ensign overachieving at saving them from a local tradition where she's going to get executed. Immediately, I thought, oh, they're not doing justice. That's all I could think as soon as I read it, and I panicked all day. So what I will say about this episode, with no spoilers, I was really pleasantly surprised by it because it wasn't as bad as Justice.
And if you think about it, very early doors, you get that confirmed because it's a place which doesn't have a lot of water, so you know no greenhouses are going to be involved.
That's true. Like,
she might have to break the Prime Directive. Now, we will come to that later.
Oh, I've got arguments with that.
I think the important words in it is Burnham is forced to consider breaking the Prime Directive. I think we will have a lot to say about the wording of that later.
Well, I would argue she doesn't, but that's another thing. I would argue she doesn't even have to contemplate it, but we'll get there.
We will get there. So we start with them testing the vial from last week, which was apparently a life form, but we covered that last week. Now, I will say with this, I really like the way this sequence is shot. They're in this lab and there's like strobe lighting and all sorts going on.
Yeah, they're hitting it with different light waves.
Thought it was visually striking, this scene.
Visually striking, and also it's really nice to hear Burnham going, it's like, well, don't just think of it from this point of view. Think of it from every point of view, like historically, like all this kind of, and that's how they get to the water thing. I thought that was a really kind of nice bit.
Yeah.
Science, do you think?
It did occur to me, though, that they're going, well, we've run this test and this test and this test. And I'm thinking, okay, it's water, but what planet is it from? Because, you know, there's lots of different planets. And that would have been the first thing that I'd have thought of, is to like, okay, where does it actually come from? Which is kind of how they get to it in the end. It just seemed really obvious to me that that's what you'd look into first,
it did give us a nice scene with what's his name? I always forget his name.
Damn it,
Rayner.
No, the direct.
Kovic. Yes.
Seeing Kovic. I think he's not in it much, but I just like his character.
Yeah, he's great. And I like that he's got this weird quirk that he's got a 21st century legal pad now.
I wonder if I
genuinely, would, when you were saying the name, I couldn't think who that was. It's like, I was Cronenberg.
I wonder if this is actually a real-life quirk of Cronenberg's, that he doesn't like using computers to make his notes.
I could see it being,
And he still writes everything longhand on a notepad.
The only thing I would say, And this is kind of like a very much a Discovery kind of complaint, because like you guys say, love the fact that he used a notepad, lovely quirk of his, but then they have to over-egg it by going, it's like, actually, it's an original one from the 20s. This isn't replicated. It's like, what? And you're just using it to pass any note? Like, how many of these have you got? I know he's resourceful.
He's probably got loads.
I mean, I know we're meant to guess from where, but it's like, still, it
probably
such a supply. You can just go...
Probably owned like a Staples or something, so he's got.
And they kept the whole thing. I mean, it was
the last stationery shop to survive World War III, and it was always been in the Kovic family.
I don't know. Like,
I just wonder if this is a quirk of Cronenberg's.
It could be,
because he seems like the sort of. It does seem like the sort of man who would have that I don't do my notes on the computer and send you emails and all that. I write it down and you'll have to check on the post-it board what I'm saying to you for today.
All I agree with, it's just, again, like, yeah, I've got so much, I wipe my ass with it. That's how much of this I've got. Like, it's just...
Maybe it's time travel.
Yeah.
Maybe, all right, actually, I'll give you that. He probably might have
could time be. Time. Yeah, you know, probably before the end of the time war, he probably thought, I'm going to have to travel back and get as much paper as I can now,
I'll W.H. Smith's.
Okay. Yeah. No, I will buy this time travel answer.
Oh, but might have gone back a bit.
Writers didn't think of that.
It might have gone back a bit further and gone to John Menzies and got all the closing down stock.
Could have been all the works. He could have gone to the works. They're always having a closing down sale.
No, it's
but they
stock
never closed.
Sale.
They
no,
never closed down. Sorry, stop clearance.
Clearance
right.
Sale constantly.
And even
but then they just get the same crap back in again.
Yeah.
Although, and also, even though this is so far in the future, they haven't got paper anymore. Somehow, I will bet you W.H. Smith somehow still exists. I don't know how it exists now.
No, it's very overpriced. Unless they want to sponsor us, in which case we think W.H. Smith is great.
I love you, Smiths. Yeah, just send us some legal pads.
Yeah, very good for magazines. Good selection of magazines in Smiths.
I know, but like, how are they running as a business? They charge more than anywhere else.
Because if one person buys one thing, then that keeps them going.
Yeah, maybe that's it, yeah.
I once bought some cigarettes from a W.H. Smith and they went, are you sure? We're really overpriced. And I was like...
Maybe it's the honesty.
I was like, I really want one. So I guess I'm going to have to go for it. Anyway,
it's that thing that... Like saying, how did they survive? But they have the huge range of magazines that you can't buy anymore.
Yeah, that's probably it. And the magazines are all sold at cover price. They don't mark up the magazines.
Yeah.
Anyway, join us next time for our economics podcast.
Smiths.
Culber, meanwhile, then, has got... Let me get this right. So he's got a hologram of his grandmother.
That's which been is, from his mind.
That but is going to alleviate his grief.
But also pretends to have patience, even though he knows it's a hologram. Which and maybe he finds that oddly comforting. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of explained that there's been some sort of mind scan done on him to extrapolate this hologram from his memories of his grandmother. So...
This seems almost a bit ghoulish, really. I'm not sure I would want that, even if it was something that...
Like, if his grandmother had still been alive when they've gone missing, which is possible, so he's missing her, so he doesn't see... obviously she is dead because they jumped 1,000 years into the future.
Mm.
But during his lifetime in the 22nd century...
Oh, okay, that's not as weird.
She won't have been dead, so they've extrapolated someone who he felt close to, who's still alive.
Yeah, okay.
That's how I thought of it.
And I can say that has been quite comforting, actually. In the circumstances they're in, that they've been taken from all the family.
Yeah, I'd not put two and two together in that way. I think you're right. It's not as macabre as I was thinking it was.
It's not like his dead grandma who died when he was like 5-year-old that the memories
That's why I'd imagine what you're saying. I imagine they took everything from his brain scan and then they also did a deep search and it automatically searches all the information they can get from the database, hence her knowing about her replacing the food, which he didn't know about. So that all kind of tricks for me. I don't know. Again, it's it's a minor deal, but for some reason, things like this really take me out of it. But it's why is she saying she's got patience? He knows the whole, why would you program that? Is it weirdly comforting? Would you find that comforting to pretend she's in her life from the past? I don't know. I was trying to think why you do that.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's an interesting one. Anyway, I mean, this is all tying into Culber and his exploration of spirituality now, which it does feel like we're actually going to do something with that.
Shall we take that as a chunk as opposed to going back over the...
All four final episodes, we are going to cover this in massive detail.
Well, you see, this is the thing. I think this episode, on a rewatch, what I really noticed is it's got the elements of a really nice episode, but it's the way the amount it gives to what and the amount it doesn't give to something else. The Adira plotline comes to a head in this one, and there's wonderful scenes with her, and I think they play it really well, but you don't get really time to explore that as much as I feel like it needed to be. Whereas this one with Culber, which I don't mind the plot line, but it's he's always got to have a weird thing with Stamet, which I don't like, because I love them as a couple. I love their little character moments. There's a bit where he visits him in sick bay and they give a little kiss just before they leave. And it just always gives me joy when I see them together. They're just such a great couple. And I like the fact they're opposite, but they've got this kind of place they meet in the middle, personality-wise. It's so well realized. I don't know why they've always got to try and create some sort of distance with them. Like in this one, it's like... It's because he explains it to Paul. Paul says, why don't you just enjoy it? Which I don't think is bad advice. He goes the brain's a funny thing. And maybe he isn't getting on the same level spiritually that Culber is. But he gives no time to try and explain it. And then later he goes, I don't think he'll ever get it. It's try and explain it to him. You did nothing to explain it to him other than the initial statement. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean, but I quite liked the sort of the resolution to it where Buck's speaking to him and saying, it's okay that you have something that isn't shared with your partner. I thought that was a nice way of addressing it, because Culber seems to be worried that, if he doesn't understand my spiritual side, that's a problem. And Buck's no, it's not. That's of you. Not everything has to be. So I actually quite liked the resolution, and I thought it did reinforce the differences between Stamets and Culber, that when Stamets started looking to it, it was okay, so let's do all these scans and we'll work out what's happened to your brain. And he approached it from his field of expertise, whereas Culber's
Culber asked him to do those scans, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, but I feel the way he was talking after he'd done it was, to Stamets's mind, it was, well, we've ruled out anything physical, so therefore that will comfort you. Whereas Culber's well, no, this is a feeling that I've got. So it did show that they just approach things differently. And I think Buck put his mind at rest at the end of the episode about it.
Maybe it's just the amount, because like last episode, he was talking about the fact that he wasn't sure about talking to Paul about this. In this episode, he has a conversation about him not being sure about Paul getting it. Then he has the conversation with Paul. Mm. And so I would have just cut straight to it, because I don't think he's got an inability to talk to his husband. I think they've got a really great relationship. I think I get, like, in real life, you might have that conversation with a friend before you have the conversation with him. For time you've got in a 10 episode series, the amount of conversations you've got to get to the conversation, just cut those. Just, you don't need those. Just go straight to the conversation. And then it would feel like you're... I would just say, I would have thought then you've covered this story. You've kept that storyline alive in this. You've given it a couple of scenes here, but then you made space for Adira to have their crisis.
Adira, we talked about it last week, how it was just sort of thrown up, like, oh, don't worry about the spider thing, that wasn't your fault. If we're honest, we were a little bit worried last week that this was going to become an ongoing saga. And I'm glad that it's not, and I'm glad that they used Rayna to just shoot it down, because Rayna basically is like, look, wasn't your fault, get over it, you're on the bridge, I need you doing work.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great use of Rayna's character.
He was great, and I think he should be quite punchy in his delivery, because he says a lot in a few words. He's really good at that. But I almost wanted to see them go wrong first before they then got corrected by him and went right. Like, they don't actually make any...
No, they get a little bit nervous, and then that's it.
But what's the cost of that? Why is he then going, it's like... Oh,
yeah, there isn't a cost. Like,
the doubt has to have a cost, surely, for it to be... Do you know what I mean?
There isn't any dramatic weight to it. It's just Adira feels a bit unsure of themselves. Rayna has a word, they're fine.
Yes, yeah, that's what it felt like. Yes.
Yeah.
Which,
that is exactly what happened.
Yeah. But it was a great story. Like, that was a fun thing to do, but give it some time. In fact, that pairing I really enjoyed. I would have liked to have seen more of it. I would like some more time for that to breathe. To show what a great teacher is. And also to land the fact that where he's been uncertain before, he is really finding his niche as a teacher here. He's got rid of the responsibility of being captain, and he can go back to teaching, which he seems to really have a passion for. Maybe influence Tilly later with that, because she's going through crisis.
Having a very positive influence on this crew, or he certainly seems to be.
But he shows his doubt, but like, they don't have, after this, just it would be lovely to it, but just one little scene with him and Burnham to say, it's like, you know what, I actually feel really good. Like, for the first time since I've been doing this commander stuff, I feel like I found what I'm contributing as a commander as opposed to a captain. But they don't land it. They don't give any time to land that.
Well, we've still got a few episodes to land Rayna's arc, but I'm glad that we've wrapped up Adira's little...
I didn't mean his whole arc, yeah.
Rayna must be a good captain and good at communicating with you, because he was made captain. He's good at...
Mm.
He's got to be good in some way with people.
Yeah. I feel like this is about his finding his joy, though, and like, even though I don't need his whole arc to be wrapped up, it's just been nice to have a moment where he recognised what happened there, what he enjoyed there. That's all I want.
So we're dancing around the main plot, which we'll dig into a bit then. So
10 minute tough mudder. I've always wanted to see that in Star Trek.
We've kind of covered off the subplot, so. When they trace the origins of the water, they basically got... It's basically the Avatar planet, isn't it? It's Pandora. Like, we've got this big, almost floating rock thing. It feels like, we've got a bit of the B-roll VFX from Avatar. I'm not saying it doesn't look nice. It does. It just reminded me very much aesthetically of Pandora. But we're not looking for an Obtainium. Instead, we've got... get inside a weather tower, because we think that's where the clue is.
Can anyone explain to me? Right, we we've had sort of adjacent reasons why Burnham has to go on missions before. Can you explain in any way why Burnham had to go on this mission?
Because she's a xenoanthropologist.
And they haven't got any others of those.
It's just getting tiring now. The captain has to go. Because they got away from this from the original series. When they went to Next Gen, they went, this is silly. The captain goes on every away mission. The command staff go on every away mission. And they've just forgotten them lessons.
That's why you don't have time to give any time to the other crew members, because they never have missions.
Yeah.
They never.
I think, though, to give it a storytelling read, not as in to make sense of it within the story, but I think because they're wanting to have these scenes with Raina interacting with the crew and being a good commander, they need to have him there. I mean, the obvious way of doing it is, though, that Raina could lead an away team and bond could with have the crew and on could, an away
and
team.
And he could have different members of crew with him on every away team, so we got to know them.
We could do that. We're not going to.
We saw their different specialities.
and it feels like he, like I was alluding to before, he would be a better fit because of the niche he's finding here. Like, we're obviously finding out he's a great teacher. Tilly's going through a crisis as a teacher.
Yeah,
those two things could go together nicely.
That would have been good. And yeah, Tilly's crisis, again, I presume a lot of this is just set up for the Academy series. Like, we get a little bit like, oh, I'm not sure, people keep leaving. And I presume that is to lay the groundwork of, you know, Starfleet Academy is re-establishing itself in this time frame. And it's not.
Maybe they keep leaving because she keeps fucking off on missions and she's not
could
there
be that.
To teach them.
Yeah, they've got like some, they've got a substitute teacher back in who's actually a geography teacher. But, I mean, when I did a bit of substitute teaching work, I got thrown in doing all sorts of, like, you're doing history today. I'm like, I haven't got a bloody clue. And
sorry, you're doing history today. That's you.
History today, that's you. Yeah. But, like, the kids come up to you, so they don't know that you're not an history teacher.
No.
So they come up to you and go, so what about this? And you go, well, why don't you use this as an opportunity to develop your research skills and go find me the answer, which, of course, I know. Let's have a spin-off show, which is back at the Academy, where they've got these trainee teachers who don't know what they're doing, and that's why Tilly's students are all leaving.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see now.
I wonder if they're setting Raina up as actually being the teacher side, that he's going to be part of the Academy.
I'd be up for that.
And that's why they brought him in.
Oh, if they did that.
I'd be well up for that. We're keeping all those good characters for the Academy show, and we'll leave the ones we're not so bothered about behind in Discovery. So
they also had like in a previous episode, you also had that thing with Tilly and the other teacher who she was flirting with, which is now just dropped now. Like it's just the way they pick up and drop things and
and what was
and over concentrate on other things.
I can't remember if I said at the time, but what was weird about that is that they played Tilly as being all sort of giggly and, ooh, this boy might like me. Whereas previously we've seen Tilly to be very confident in that department, like the scene back in season one where she's saying, oh, well, I'm into soldiers at the moment, but, you know, I used to be in... And she's not this giggly waif who's...
Yeah.
Flustered by attention from someone else. She's quite a positive person about her sexuality, or that's how we've always portrayed her. But anyway.
Yeah, in the first series episode, like, yeah, because there was the one with the time hops with Mud. And she grabs a beer from this guy when they're playing beer pong, downs it kind of like very flirty, and she goes in the kitchen, she goes, no. And it's like,
Whereas now she's all, I mean, people do change, but it feels like we've just forgotten a character trait that we established there.
So we've decided to change it for no reason.
So the whistle language then that gives the episode its title. Do fine. Just a bit of a gimmick.
I didn't mind the whistle thing, and I love the fact they explained a lot of pre kind of communication.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's something that isn't exclusive to here. The nice idea. The bit which I thought was weird was when they translated it and it's still in rhymes. It's like,
yes, that's what I was just going to say. That really annoyed me because I wrote down some of it. So it says, we travel from dust. So the first person is whistling, we travel from dust. And the response comes, come rest, you must. We shelter from the storm. In here, you'll be warm. So is the person who's whistling back thinking, shit, I've got to make that rhyme.
I imagine that because of the nature of it, because they do speak normally, that there's said only a few phrases that they actually use with the whistle.
So it's all the direction.
So
right.
when you're heading towards the tower, it's like we travel from dust, so someone's sending back to you the answer to it, and you're following there.
And I think it's like a simplified code.
I think it's sort of like a good example, we all had to do French at school, I assume.
We did.
Yeah.
But I bet you don't remember half of what they said, but you can maybe remember how to say hello, or you might have been taught a phrase, but you won't learn all the different bits of the language that you were taught. And this being an ancient language, obviously, and they've moved on from it, you've probably got a few certain phrases that they use that the whistle.
Yeah, I will take that.
These whistles mean, this tune means that, this tune means that.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with it. It's a simplified language because it's a call and response. David says, greeting, whistle speakers. Oh, hang on, we need to make it rhyme. Greetings, whistle
speakers. We're here,
speakers.
So your intellect might be tweaked.
Nearly.
That's right.
It'll do. It's good.
We're here and we're a bunch of nipple tweakers, David.
And join the retrekkers.
Nearly, again, I don't think we did a full rhyme. I think you both achieved a half rhyme there. I think you can work on your whistle speak.
I've got a plug-in.
David says that works, so that's fine. Thank you, David.
I like the idea that it's like a chant more than...
A call and response thing. Yes, I like that. Thank you, Elliot.
When you translated it in a rhyme, it just still sounds so hokey. There's no way on the screen it didn't sound cheesy and shit. I'm sorry.
It's one of them where you're like, are they making it rhyme?
You've got
to imagine if it's rhyming, and it's part of a tradition as well that they give the call and they get the answer of where to go, that it's become sort of a ritualized response to a ritualized call like about.
Yeah, your explanation is brilliant. It's better than the moment in the episode. It just doesn't work. Like, even if it wasn't.
Are you listening, CBS? You could sign me.
Yeah, they could sign you to do footnotes for episodes and it'd offset so much of the potential backlash.
And if you're not going to have time to set up what Elliot's just sort of brilliantly headcanoned, like, just do it that they're all chanting it together. Then it would have been a nice little chant.
That would have sounded
a bit more natural, I think. It just sounds so forced.
So they meet the woman with the very hoarse throat and they decide, well, basically, they're going to cure her. And this is where they've obviously been watching June, because we get the sand cure, which makes everything go really trippy, which it's a choice. It happens in this episode. I'm not sure we needed it, but...
I think I understand this as well.
Go on.
Because they're using the sound vibrations to make the dust come out of her lungs.
Right.
But sound vibrations, if you're in the place, they're affecting your eardrums. And if your eardrums get messed with, you go dizzy.
True.
Which makes you sort of trippy things.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's a reason for it. It just seemed a bit like, let's throw everything at the wall. Like, does this episode really need that?
It's one of them things, like, this is another visually lovely shot.
Yeah.
And a bit like we had the visually lovely shot when they were examining the water. And it's almost like they've spent money on having visually lovely shots instead of spending money on having good writers.
Yeah, because this story is, it is very Star Trek by numbers. Like, let's do a really basic Prime Directive story.
It is, but it's, there's been so many better ones.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there is a better episode crying to come out of it. Like, again, if you just change the volumes of, like, this scene a little less, that scene a little more, we don't need this whistle bullshit, really. Like, you know, when they're, and when they're like emptying sand, all I can think is like bloody clever Sam that it knows what's sand and knows what's other things within the human body. That's, I mean, that's some clever sand right there.
It is clever sand.
And clever sound.
Yeah, I've
got to agree with you. It is almost like there's a good episode hidden in here.
Many better episodes.
Maybe they could hire Snyder to come in and make it 2 hours.
The Zack Snyder cut of Whistle Speak. Yes, that's what we need.
And I think Jodie's right. In fact, like, just say like Unu Game Best Cinematic Episode Awards. But I also kind of like felt with that, it's almost like, was it just me? Every now and again, I think Discovery's visuals almost too good. Like, I kind of miss some set bits. Like, it's always outside and it's always kind of real world. I want a bit of set because it feels more Star Trek to me.
Discovery, apart from what it's done with spaceships, because it's shit at cinematic effects of spaceships.
Yes.
But visually, it's always looked really, really good.
Yes.
It's always been really high up there how it looks visually. But it doesn't always work just because it looks good. Like, look at the Klingons. The Klingons, if you had them as a different race, in the first season, if that had been a different race, if you called them something different...
It was impressive makeup, yeah.
It's really worked visually. Klingons, it fucked it.
I know you're getting it, but the only thing I would say is, like, watching them back recently... because it's a full prosthetic face, it does not move like they it's really hard for them to mind it. Like, true. That's a serious drawback of that costume generally.
But I think my point is that Discovery has always looked really good visually, and I think that is one of the things you can always say. Discovery has been the most visually stunning of the Star Trek shows, even though it hasn't always been the best written and best executed of the Star Trek.
Yeah, it's just got it has got an aesthetic to it. It's not necessarily one that I love or that I want for my Star Trek, but from a production standpoint, it's very impressive work, and it always has been. So we meet Rava then, who's really young and wants to get to the top of the mountain, but the dad doesn't want them to go to the top of the mountain for some reason, even though it's surely a good thing to go to the top of the mountain. And so we're dropping these fairly subtle hints that there may be a twist coming further along in the episode.
Top of the mountain?
There may be something untoward at the top of the mountain. And you also get the horse throat woman saying, oh, don't worry, you can still show that you love the gods even by not going to the top of the mountain. So don't feel you have to go to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
It's almost as if there's something about
going to the top of the mountain. Going to the top of the mountain to save all your people and pray to your gods is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Or can be a bad thing. It's almost like, if I like you, don't go.
Yes.
I hate my neighbour. You better know how to run, boy.
Yeah, you get right up there and give it some really good prayer, son.
I did kind of like just... we were talking about Trek by numbers. It's like, oh, Tilly's going through a crisis about students. She gets a student there to advise about kind of like, it must be so difficult for her dad. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Okay, yeah.
She gets a student proxy to stand in and show how good she can be, but it all goes a bit wrong for her. But we'll get there. There's a weird line where I think it is Rava who goes, "Oh, I've been really inspired by you two." Like, what have they done that's really inspiring? They've turned up with a woman with a funny throat and then got all trippy with sand.
Yeah, and Burnham passed out because she stayed with her pat in the back.
What's so inspiring?
And in every step of the way, they don't know anything about the world. And I'm not saying, like, they explain away, but it's like, oh, do they not have that in the north of the world or whatever? And they go, oh, no, we don't, or whatever. That's fine. I don't mind that. But then for her to be, like you say, it's like, I'm so inspired by you. What, the person who doesn't know how to read numbers in your...
Yeah.
And again, that's not insulting that. I'm just saying, it's like, that's even less inspiring. It's below average.
These two don't even know that you die when you get to the top of the mountain. That's how rubbish these two are. Don't be inspired by that.
I'm always inspired by less than average people.
This takes me back to what I've just said. It's maybe thinking these two are really rubbish.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
These are really good sacrificial lambs.
Yeah, get these two sent up.
Run, girls.
Yeah, they don't even know what's coming, yeah.
he's G'ing them up. Yeah, you two are, yes. Go for it. Yes, you're awesome.
Oh, David's just sent us a question. We have discussed it a little bit, David, about Culber's spiritualism. I think we're going to see that play out. To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes off to be a space priest at the end.
Be surprised if he goes off to be join the academy.
Oh, well, you think Culber in the academy as well?
Yeah, Culber is a spiritual academy. I think there's certain characters you can see who are getting a bit more screen time with things.
Yeah, he'll be the RE teacher.
And I wonder if they're going to be sort of brought into the academy, that it's like, no, we need these people.
Maybe. Because
obviously we want to teach everyone things from 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, maybe because so.
We want to regress.
And just to catch up on what we were talking about before, David, basically what we were saying was, like, we're enjoying this journey with Culber, but, like, they're spending a long-ass time just getting to the point where he actually even talks to Paul, let alone he goes on the journey. And, like, it's just, it seems like too much is put in that when you could have been following, the story.
That's another reason I think you may go to the academy.
Oh, if they don't wrap it up in Discovery, that would be so annoying, just because it's... Don't do it, like, just, this is a story in Discovery. You can't then just cut it off.
No, you certainly shouldn't do that.
Maybe we'll have in the final episode, Stamets will die, and that's why Culber will go join the academy.
No, you are not allowed to bring those two apart, and they both died too many times. We've already done it.
That's true. But it is Stamets' turn if they're taking it in turns. But
I want to love them so much, though. They really are. I think my favourite Discovery couple.
There is an Academy series coming, David. 2026.
They've only been teasing an Academy season. Is it actually 50 years this year?
They've been talking about it forever.
I'm thinking it was actually first put forward in 1974.
It wouldn't surprise me.
So I've got a feeling it may be 50 years since the first sort of suggested an Academy series.
Although I would...
It's definitely was the 70s, so it's getting that way, even if it wasn't 50 years.
All I'm going to say is that I know this is the most it's been sort of promised so far. I was just watching, near the end of season 2 of Discovery, watching back, and it's like, it was the whole thing of Section 31 where they set up, I know we're getting it now, but it's like, they set up a whole cast, basically. You had Ash, you had Leland.
Yeah.
And, like, none of it. It's all gone. Like, it's
We've got Strange New Worlds, because that's what we wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Academy's definitely happening. Alex Kurtzman had some interviews recently, and that is definitely the next one. Unless they make Legacy, but definitely the next one, we'll see.
Yeah. Unless they make Legacy.
So then the next twist to the tale then is they discover this is actually malfunctioning, the rain tower. Oh, and this is
awful.
Yeah, Well, that wasn't quite what I was going to say, but what I was going to say is you get this point where they decide, right, one of us has to fix that, one of us has to carry on with the race. And I'm in no way making any comment on Tilly's figure or level of fitness or anything like that, but of the two of them, you've got Tilly, who's the scientist, who's probably not in as good a shape as Michael. Then you've got Michael, who's less suited to the science task, but more suited to running. And instead, they go all the way around.
We've had 4.5 seasons now that Michael does all the action.
Yeah. But yeah. Then for no apparent reason, they go, oh, no, Michael will stay there until he'll do the running. And it just seems odd, and it's clearly to position the characters where we want them to go. So we want Tilly in peril, and we want Michael.
The strange thing about this as well is that they've had this tablet that makes them thirsty, and they've got to sort of not drink the water on the way in the race. Michael grew up on Vulcan. That's a desert world.
Yeah, good point.
Oh,
and she's
point.
Used to being in a hot environment with low water and still being able to function at high.
Yeah, you're right.
Level.
Michael should have been straight up the mountain.
There was also this bit which you had in a previous episode, which, like, I like it when they set something up and it feels satisfying when they land it, but it now feels so forced that they had Tilly running in a previous episode and goes like, hey, All-Star Academy track meet. Like, what's something you've never mentioned before? That's kind of weird and out of place. Now it's like, oh, you just chuck that in. Like, you've just forced that in, as opposed to, as you guys have done, thinking about who logically would be best in that situation, who's best equipped, who's best physically. And again, like Jim's saying, it's not an insult to anyone's physicality that they might be better suited to one thing than another based on their physicality. It's just factual. Altitude sickness issues is very random, David.
Yeah, good point. It might, Michael may not.
And you have taken a random alien tablet.
True.
But I would have thought that the first thing you do, though, is base it on, like, they don't, like, as if it is random, we've got no reason to believe that Tilly would be better than Michael. Yeah.
No, and for the reasons Elliot outlined, Michael probably would be better because she should be more used to this sort of climate. But anyway, it's clearly so that we get to put Tilly in peril and we get to have Michael make the decision regarding the Prime Directive, which is fine.
Yes. Are we getting on to Prime Directive?
We're nearly there, because I just want to talk briefly about, you get that moment. And this,
I wonder if mine
Tilly
and Elliot's, because we're both obviously leaning something. I wonder if we've got the same thing. But I'll let Elliot Tilly, when we get there.
We get the moment. Michael goes to fix. Should we do Michael fixes the
okay,
thing
yeah.
First. So Michael has stayed behind as the scientist to fix the thing. You know, the really physically excellent one has stayed behind as the scientist to fix the thing. And hasn't got a clue she has to form the Deera.
This is true. Yeah.
And also, we don't see her actually get the thing, do we? Like, it just seems like they're on the ship, and he goes, oh, yeah, found it with a note. It's like, so, like, again, like,
they found it because
everything.
They found it because there was a. The moss because of radiation.
I actually quite like that. I thought that was.
And some of the moss had died on a certain side, so it gave them a direction to where it was.
Yeah, I actually quite liked that.
So I got why she found it.
No, not why she found that. I meant just seeing her find it, seeing her get the object and, like, get the note. Like, they describe that later.
Oh, no, I meant the control.
Oh, you mean the clue?
No, I'm talking about the control panel.
The finding of the clue happens completely off screen.
But the whole thing is finding these things, and you don't show them finding
things. Well, they do the Super Mario ending, like, they go, you know, well done, Tilly, but your clue is in another castle. It turns out it's actually in, like, Tower number 5 or something, and they're in Tower number 3. But you do get Tilly's big teacher moment where it's like, oh, you can't complete it with an empty bowl. And Tilly goes, I'm going to be the good teacher. I'm going to go and share my bowl, and we'll have this really inspiring moment where We help each other across the finish line, and you've just condemned them to death. Well done, Tilly. He's a bit of a cruel slap in the face because Tilly did everything right, but
it's actually a
sacrifice.
I did enjoy this. This was a lovely little Star Trek moment. They help Tilly out, so Tilly helps them out. Like that.
Yes.
Nice, lovely, like lovely little moment. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, and also it's nice that it leads to an unintentional consequence.
It is darkly comedic that it's actually a death sentence that they would have avoided.
Like when they got here, and this is getting into this chamber is the death sentence. I actually thought, you know, when they're given the tablets at the start of the race. And if you look at Tilly's hand, you sort of see her go like that. And I thought she maybe palmed it.
Oh.
And that's why she was running better all the way through.
Oh, that'd be good.
And I thought she was not to be discovered when they said that through a local tradition and she was facing peril of death. And I was thinking there that, oh, well, she's palmed it. That's why she's running better than Burnham.
That would have been quite good. Better.
And she's being caught out right at the end.
That would have been a good twist, yeah. But instead we go with the sacrifice twist, which I think Strange New Worlds did better in their first season, where it was they had to sacrifice the kid.
Yeah, much better.
And then we'll talk about the Prime Directive then, because this reminds me very much of the TNG episode, Who Watches the Watchers, where you have the people who are like, oh, so you're the Picard, you're the God, and Picard has to convince them, no, I'm not, you know. And that is an all-time classic episode for my money. This is not. so Michael has to make the decision. Will we break the Prime Directive by revealing ourselves to this guy?
Can we discuss the decision-making process?
Yes.
In what way did she have a decision-making process? She phones up Radio and goes, beam me in now. I'm going to save Tilly. Someone is there. They'll see you. I don't care. Beam me in now. Where was the decision process of breaking the Prime Directive?
Oh, the world. Yeah.
Oh, I've got a thing about the Prime Directive as well. Because, right, yeah, like you say, there should have been the decision moment. You could have brought in Admiral Silver Daddy Bear. Always welcome. And you could have a lovely scene where, yeah, he holograms in. They have this conversation. But surely the main key argument here is the Denobians were already there, already set up all this shit. So then the Prime Directive's already... Like, I mean, they might have done...
Well, no, because...
But they've changed the course of the future of that species.
But the species weren't aware that they'd done it.
But isn't part of the Prime Directive not to alter the course of evolution?
Supposedly, yes.
They've
already
changed. Yes, it is, but the this has been... The Prime Directive has previously been broken in what the Denobians did.
Yeah.
But Michael is now breaking the Prime Directive to expose what the Denobians did. This society had no idea anything had been done.
I would say if you had that scene with ASDB... and you had that kind of like debate about the Prime Directive, she could have brought that in as a defense. It's like, well, the Denobians have already changed the course of their evolution. Because of that, Tilly's in this situation. So we're now just like sort of course correcting. Like they could have really satisfied.
Yeah, you could argue that the Denobians have done that, so we've got to fix it. Yeah. But they do. David's got the answer though. It's a red directive. So yeah, red directive overrules Prime Directive. You can do whatever you like.
Is it only Michael who's aware that under a red? No, she's told all the
crew. No, she's told anyone who'll listen. So, yeah.
So if they're under a red directive and all the crew knows, so I assume Rayner's second in command knows. If that was reason giving them right to break the Prime Directive, he wouldn't have argued with her.
No, true.
My argument would be that you've got you've got the Red Director. That's fine. If you want to use that, just do the same sort of thing as I'm suggesting, but bring Cronenberg's character again. Have her instantly go to white space, and he goes, you got the Red Directive. Go for it.
Like,
yeah,
that's your,
you can
like,
break yeah. that. Yeah. We need Tilly alive to find the clue, so you're justified in whatever you do.
Hold on. Do we actually need Tilly alive to find the clue here?
No, we could have gone in after and just read the hieroglyphs. Yeah.
Okay, you end it she goes to Cronenberg to make a case, and she goes like, he goes, you know, we call it the Red Directive because redhead is sacrificable. That's actually why.
I'm good with that.
It's the Red Directive, not the Redhead Directive. People
and then he's like, and now we're changing to the Brunette Directive, Michael. Yeah.
And that
gives us the perfect thing where Rainer becomes the head of the Starfleet Academy.
Yeah?
I want to see more as much Rainer as you can give me if he spins off into...
Yeah, it has got interesting things, the Red Directive. Does the Red Directive overrule the Prime Directive?
Yeah, I would guess.
If we only break in the Prime Directive to save one crew member, is that justified because you're meant to sacrifice yourself for the Prime Directive?
Yeah,
it's not above.
Because all they would have had to have done was gone in after Tilly and the other person had died, read the clues, and then they could have fixed the machine without revealing themselves to the native population. This could have all been avoided.
Yeah, no harm, no foul. They're happy to keep sacrificing everyone every couple of years.
I suppose they kind of justify it by saying, well...
The head of the Starfleet Academy.
They sort of justify it saying, well, it needs maintaining. So I suppose the idea is we've told this one guy and him and his family will now become the custodians of repairing it without revealing that there's something else. And it does tie into the wider thing.
But will they keep up with the sacrifices? Because you can't beat a good sacrifice. Really.
No, I think they're going to say we don't need the sacrifices now. They'll probably play it off as it's a miracle they survived.
Well, it did say, though, that we need the sacrifices because that stopped a war between our people.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so, it'll be one of these where they'll revisit it in a few years and it's gone to hell because of this.
Yeah, let's still sacrifice a couple of people every year.
Well, you know what? Now that we've broken the Prime Directive and messed it all up, we'll let them worry about it. It'll be fine. They do, though, tie it into the idea of spirituality that we've got going on with Culber, in that you get the guy talks to Michael and says, well, does that mean there's no gods? And she says, well, no, there might be. It doesn't disprove it. You just know that we're there as well. And I like the idea that she's not shitting on his religion, you know.
And let's be fair, we know in Star Trek lore that the gods do exist. And to be fair, Michael should know, she should have been taught this, that there's the Great Koala.
Yes, you're right. They should know about that, yeah. But
fair enough. From Michael's original timeline, she wouldn't have known about the Great Koala. We only
know, but by now,
But Lower Decks is now 800 years in the past.
Yeah.
So that should be all part of, we've gone to the Great Koala. That should be normal religious belief. We should all be worshipping to eucalyptus slaves. No messing about.
What I would love to see is actually, because, you know, in original Star Trek, we had the Great Bird of the Galaxy. I would like a Great Bird of the Galaxy versus the Great Koala of the Galaxy, like religious war.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
I want one episode of Lower Decks where they have that, like, or maybe even a series would be great.
Can I just say one more thing on this Prime Directive?
Yeah.
When we have Tilly in the cave, who's dying... She's a proper Starfleet officer and she still doesn't break the Prime Directive. And she is going to do her duty and die. It's Michael who has the problem.
You're right. No, I agree. And she decides to break it very quickly.
Yeah. There's no consideration of decision process.
No.
Did I miss something? You're Dr. Squee?
You're lol. It means you're funny.
Oh, you're not. Oh, sorry.
It was all about the Red Directive for killing redheads. So, and then it'll move to Drew next. Yeah, no, the ground directive.
Thank you, David. Sorry, I went into a thing whereby, like, it annoys me when I type in your too quickly and I type in the wrong one. So I was like, how did I say that? How did I, in like words, do that wrong? Like, it's, yeah, sorry. Thank you, David. That's very nice of you.
So that about wraps up the episode. Then we finish with a sting for next week, which will be we're bringing Marlon Locke back, which it's only a while to come round to them, but last week I was absolutely sold on them, so I'm looking forward to seeing Marlon Locke again next week.
I really like them, but they've been arrested. Why do we need them back? What is the purpose?
Reasons. Oh, I still think they've got more. I mean, like, it would be a weird place to leave them where they've set them up now.
I want to see more of them, but how the story's progressed.
I don't think it's they're arrested. I think it's they know where they are.
No, it said that. Found them.
Oh, did they? No, it said they'd found them. But yeah, and
Cronenberg said
that
they haven't been able to get them yet because he said, right. Is it an update on Locke and like and Mole? No, it isn't. We haven't.
Yeah, I think we're off to capture them next week. So I think it'll have to be Michael and Buck who go on the mission to capture Mole and Locke.
Oh, yeah, because they did have the bit at the end where it's like, do you think you and Michael might get them back? Well, obviously they fucking will. Stop asking. Obviously they will. I mean, and one thing I wanted to actually just give a shout out to, because you called it, Jim. We sort of mentioned the similarities between this and the Key to Time in Doctor Who. And I think it was you who brought up the fact that that's got a quite unsatisfactory ending because they basically just replicate a chunk of the Key to Time. And they kind of they answer that in here. I think the writers have seen Key to Time. They've gone like,
quite possibly. Well,
we better establish that you can't just replicate pieces and put them in because they try that. I sort of like when they just sneak in like cutting off dead ends where like people go, well, why can't you replicate it? Why can't you just do that? Well, they've answered it. That I just want to give them credit where it's due. They covered something well, and God knows they don't always. Sorry,
I think we're also, because I may be misremembering the Key to Time, but don't they just decide to destroy it at the end of that?
Yeah.
So that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
Yeah, they basically send it back out.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going with this. I think they're going to discover the technology and Michael's going to unilaterally decide for everyone that it's too powerful. And
Although, actually, you know, this is Discovery, remember? So, as part of her destroying it, she has to become a god herself and become one.
Of course, I mean, that goes without saying. Yeah, Michael becomes the koala.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
So, yeah, that's where we leave that episode then. We'll be back next week to talk about the next episode. What, have we got three left now? We're cracking through them.
Four more.
Sorry, we've also almost missed my favourite game now. Like, I love in these episodes that you've got the kind of, like, they've established Let's Fly so much, and we've taken the piss out of it, but it's become, like, I'm looking for it every episode, and when
there
she doesn't
no
do it...
Let's Fly this way. She did not...
But I'm telling you, they've looked at our notes, because, like, they even have a moment where she goes, like, let's get on with this, or whatever she says, like, to go into the episode, and it's like... Yeah. But do you know what I mean? She was that close to saying it, and she's obviously saying up. And they're like, no, I'm going to piss off the retreat, guys. I swear, she's just doing
I'll do it for you, sweet.
Yeah, so... I don't know what's wrong with me that I start enjoying her doing that. Why do I enjoy that? It's not healthy anymore.
So for those of you keeping track, this week she did not say the thing. Last week she said the thing. David says, what's next on your weekly YouTube review after Discovery 5? We've talked about a couple of ideas. We thought about doing the largely naff one-episode romantic storylines, just to visit a couple of them, like Aquiel and Melora and ones like that, but I'm not sure how long our patience will hold out.
Have we done a deep dive on the Candlefucker episode? Because I know we mentioned when Trek goes wrong, but
we covered it briefly, but we haven't done a full episode.
That'd fall into a romantic episode.
That would have to be the finale of the NAF romance episode. That's a beautiful romantic episode,
as we all know. It's sweet.
So, yeah, but we may have Prodigy to cover. We don't know, because we know that's out there, but they're still holding out on the English language release of it. But never mind.
Enterprise. No, if you mean
Enterprise. We've done some Enterprise. We did the Temple Cold War.
Oh, yeah. What we do is, Dave, I think, because you're new to our stream. So basically what we do is, when there's new Trek, we cover that episodically. Otherwise, we go with theme. So like, there's been time travel. There's been, was there a Q1?
Don't know. We ended up covering Q when we covered the cards.
There you go. Wrote a card, wrote a
prodigy. We had the long-running
Dominion War.
When we cover Lower Decks, we tend to choose another episode from one of the Easter eggs that's related into it.
And same thing with Prodigy, really. We
similar with Prodigy, we tend to do that, think of an episode to go with it.
So,
we'll see.
But as David wasn't here at the start, should we finish by repeating our massive news?
Yes, we can repeat our massive Retrek news, which is
solar system breaking, world solar system, galaxy exclusive.
Through all time zones.
We will be bringing our stage show, When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies, to Destination, which is the new name for Destination Trek. Which is taking place this July in Blackpool. So we will be there. 26th to 28th. We're probably on the 27th.
We'll be appearing at 11 a.m.
We believe so, but card's subject to change, obviously. So if you want to get in touch with us in the meantime, we're at Retrek Pod on Twitter. We're retrekpod@gmail.com. You can check us out on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube, where Elliot is still hard at work on the Doomsday Machine.
Yeah, I got some primer on it. There's a video halfway through, but as you know, I was away last weekend partying, so things didn't get done. So there'll be a video out soon for an update on the Doomsday Machine. The 500 subscriber special, I never got a reply for asking for the address of who won. So there's going to be a call out on that, and if I don't get a reply, that will be respun, because that must be won by somebody.
Oh, yeah, speaking of which, sorry, just reminded me. Did anyone actually take home the copy of Nemesis that I left in your caravan? Because that was meant to be a prize.
Somebody did. Yeah, somebody got it from the Table of Wonders on Sunday morning.
Guys, it went out to whoever won, let me know, remind me, because someone did come up to me and I swore I'd get it. So I'll get something else for you. If whoever is watching or sees me, just remind me and I'll get you something. Get you something better.
Oh, it's David's birthday on the 25th. So yeah, get yourself down to Blackpool.
Yeah.
Come
join us. We'll get you a £1 burger.
£1 burger, there we go. That's your
birthday. I'll tell you what, we're flush. We'll get you £1 burger each. One will get a burger, one will get a fritter, one will get one of the other.
Yep, that works. And Dr. Squee, what have we got on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, it's quite funny, actually, because I actually really had to. This is the first time I ever had an interview where I had to stop myself from trying to explain the mycelial network from Discovery in it. And it'll make sense in a minute. Basically, I wanted to make sure I got his name right. Gareth Griffith Swain. He is from Fungi Foods. Last night, he won the episode of Channel 4's Aldi's Next Big Thing, which is about getting a product into... he's just got his product launched in 1,000 Aldi stores. And it's a mushroom, like dried lion's mane mushrooms, which anyone who kind of like knows anything about kind of Eastern medicine, really great for energy and for concentration. So really great for people with ADHD. It's something I use as a daily supplement already. But it's really hard because it kind of goes off really quickly. So he's got it in dried form. It's now available in Aldi. So like half the press is from Tuesday's thing. And I was like, can I steer this to say it's like, not only is that really cool, but something you might not know is actually they use it to power the Discovery, like, which I didn't do in the end, but so tempting. Because this guy was actually a microbiologist. He was he basically is Stamets of our time.
You should have tied it all in.
I wanted to, but I was like, I mean, this guy, like, so nice giving me his time. It's like, he's just going to look confused.
I bet he was a fan.
I'm sure he was. I bet
if you're a mushroom guy, you're a Stamets guy.
I chickened out. All right. I just thought,
anyway,
talk to a microceleologist or whatever the correct term is.
We will be back next week then to talk about the next episode of Discovery. But until then, let's fly.
Let's fly, Dragon. Dragonfly.